Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the new films Home, Get Hard, Serena, and It Follows. There's an interesting lineup, something for everybody in the theaters, and some even on demand. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and the world-famous DVD roundup, along with a little bit of a sound off later on, and some things that'll probably get me in trouble on the top of the show. So listen carefully, it should be fun. But before we get to all that, this is how you can get in touch with me. If you want to email me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to reach out to me on Twitter, go to twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
All right, Ron Burgundy, let's go right into the news. Let's start Making Trouble right off the bat. This came actually as a kind of a dumb news story about a little, I guess you could call it a, you know, argument or confrontation between Cate Blanchett and some reporter who was asking her questions that she was just sort of not pleased with for the Cinderella junk, and it made a little bit of news. I don't care about that because people asking stupid questions, that's part of what happens at junkets, and actors should be able to deal with it. Every now and then you get somebody who just doesn't play along, and so I'm not even focusing on that. I'm focusing on the fact that she brought attention during this thing to this hashtag called Ask Her More. I don't know if you've heard of this, but apparently it was started, I believe it was by Reese Witherspoon, during the whole award season when she was on so many red carpets, and she was wanting people to ask her more than just who she's wearing. And I'm sorry, that's just dumb. I know that doesn't make me nice to the feminists. I know that doesn't make me sound progressive. But nobody cares what you think as an actress. Nobody should, really. And the same argument goes for the men, too. This is not a female thing. I don't care what your average actor has to say about really anything. Because they don't exist to have deep thoughts and bring their knowledge to people. They're there to be celebrities. They're there on a red carpet for who they're wearing and supporting their film. I think there's a little bit more you can ask, like Reese Witherspoon, about her movie Wild, because that has themes that go along with the movie. And I think that when it's appropriate to the film, sure. Even like Patricia Arquette with the idea of her talking about being a woman in Hollywood in her 40s. Those are relevant to the movie she's in. Cate Blanchett is playing the evil stepmother in Cinderella, a character that's been done to death and is playing opposite Cats and Mice in a Disney film. Now, nothing against Disney film, but this is not for us to ask Cate Blanchett about politics. This Ask Her More hashtag is just dumb because red carpet is there to strut your stuff. Red carpet is there to promote the movie. Red carpet is there to promote the designers that you're wearing who give you the stuff or let you borrow it for free. Now, going on to another thing, I'm going to step in another bear trap with women. Gal Gadot has responded, finally, after months, has finally responded to people questioning her as being cast for Wonder Woman. Here's what I find fascinating about her response. First of all, it's practically incoherent. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and it doesn't really respond or answer to anything. She says, I'm going to pick and choose a couple quotes because it's a long thing she says, but she goes, "They say that I was too skinny and my boobs were too small. It's just empty talk. And we always try to make everyone happy, but we can't." First of all, Gal Gadot's the one who made it about boobs. I have never complained about her breast size in regards to Wonder Woman. I've said she's too skinny. Yes, because the character of Wonder Woman is formidable and tall and looks like she could kick the butt off of somebody. And Gal Gadot doesn't. But you know what? Aside from her being too skinny, and I've seen the pictures of her working out and she hasn't bulked up much. But the biggest thing I've heard people complain about has nothing to do with her appearance, but it's the fact that she's a crappy actress. She's not good. She has never been good. In all the Fast and Furious movies, those movies are great for a totally other reason than her. She just happens to be lucky enough to be in them. People are more concerned about Tyrese Gibson, who's a terrible actor in his own right, in the Fast and Furious movies, than they are for Gal Gadot. She's acting wounded because people are questioning her physique. You don't think this happens to guys, too? Now, look, there's a lot of gender politics going on in Hollywood right now, and there's a lot of good points to be made. But the fact that a woman's being scrutinized for her body for playing Wonder Woman is not one of them. How many people complained about Ben Affleck because he didn't quite look the physique for Batman? A lot of people did. I remember when Chris Evans was cast as Captain America. People don't remember this now because he's really bulked up for it, but he was absolutely questioned for his, would he be able to pull off Captain America? Because he was, I mean, he was a good looking guy, but he was always a little bit on the more slim side. He wasn't fat, he was slim. He wasn't bulky, but he bulked up for it. Chris Hemsworth for Thor. Look at Chris Pratt for Guardians of the Galaxy. The guy had to lose weight for that movie. I saw somebody say on Facebook about the Gal Gadot thing. I said, well, did anyone talk about Ben Affleck or Henry Cavill, the size of his member? No, they don't. But I don't hear anyone talking about Gal Gadot's hoo-ha or anything like that. That's not what it's about. But, you know, people certainly do care about the size of a man's chest in a superhero movie. Just look at the scene in Captain America when he pops out of the pod where he's made into a super soldier. Or look at any of the Thor movies when Chris Hemsworth's walking around without his shirt on. Even Robert Downey Jr. has lost weight significantly and gotten into shape as the Iron Man movies have gone around. And as a superhero, he's in a freaking suit the whole time. So the bottom line is, it is completely and totally okay to question Gal Gadot on her physical appearance for this movie because we're questioning everybody. Here you are equal. You've got your equality on this. You're being asked the same question that guys are. Is your chest big enough? Okay. I don't even hear people complaining about that. Most people complain about the fact that she's a scrawny little waif. I don't care if she was in the Israeli army. I'm sure she could kick butt, but she doesn't look like it, and that's important. Couple of the real quick movie news I just want to plow through. One of them is Vin Diesel has predicted that Furious 7 is going to win Best Picture at next year's Oscar, which is probably going to happen right after he wins the Nobel Peace Prize for making these movies. Jennifer Lawrence has said she's done with the X-Men series after Apocalypse. Who didn't see this coming? I mean, she doesn't need that series anymore, and she's been in, must be what, the third movie she's in? It's okay. She's not defining her career. She has a huge career outside of this, and she just was in X-Men First Class when she was really kind of starting out in the mainstream. Idris Elba is going to be playing the villain in Star Trek 3, most likely. He's totally not going to be playing Khan. I want him to come out and say he's not playing Khan, because then people will be like, oh my God, is he actually going to play Khan now? And then finally, X-Files is back on Fox for 6 episodes, which may or may not be good. I don't know. I think it's weird that they're doing a 6-episode run. I think they're just doing, I have a friend who works for Forbes, Merrill Barr, which blows my mind that he works for Forbes now. But he has made a point that it's about not having this thing jump ship to Netflix. And I think that's a good point. That's why they're bringing it back to Fox. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Two movies I want to touch on really quick. The first one is Arnold Schwarzenegger's new film, Maggie, which is offering a different take on anything he's really done before. He plays a father whose daughter has gotten infected with a disease that's going to turn her into a zombie, and he's trying to save her.
I wouldn't normally release someone with this type of infection.
Dad!
I need you to follow the rules here. Quarantine is 8 weeks in. She's probably going to show more signs of aggression and hunger. When that happens, say your goodbyes and get her straight through quarantine.
This one looks interesting. I mean, it looks actually kind of cool. I'm not a big zombie fan, and it does look a little bit too Walking Dead-ish to me. But overall, I'm curious to see what they do with it. I'm curious to see Schwarzenegger handle something that's less... I mean, he's been trying it with movies like The Last Stand and Sabotage, where he's no longer just the clean-cut action hero. I'm curious to see what he does with this. It opens on May 22nd. The next one is Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which stars, of course, Tom Cruise coming back as Ethan Hunt in the latest Mission Impossible movie.
The time has come to dissolve the IMF.
Now, I want you to choose your next words very carefully. Where is Hunt?
Last I heard, he was tracking the Syndicate.
Ethan, where are you?
The Syndicate is real. A rogue nation trained to do what we do.
An anti-IMF.
They're coming after us with everything they've got.
You ready?
You want to bring down the Syndicate? It's impossible.
This one looks fantastic. I think that the Mission Impossible movies have gotten better and better as they've gone along. So I'm hoping this is at least as good as 3 and 4. And it looks like it's going to be pretty amazing. I think they finally hit a stride. It takes some years to make these movies, but I think they look pretty good. It opens on July 31st. Anyways, with that, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Home and Serena. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr coming back at you with Fat Guys at the Movies. My apologies to anybody if you hear the raspiness in my voice. It's not me trying to overly sex things up. I know already that there are women swooning and fainting when they hear me on the radio. I mean, women, you don't want to drive when you're listening to me either on the radio or on a download, because women can get so excited they may crash the car because I'm such an attractive guy and my voice. And then you get raspy. I'm fighting a little cold. And if I start doing that, I'm going to get even sexier. The last thing we need in life is me to get sexier. I will cause an accident. So my apologies if I'm making your hormones skyrocket by listening to me with a little bit of a, you know, sexy Demi Moore kind of rasp to my voice. I can't help it. This is what happens in my life. This is my burden. This is the cross I have to bear. Let's talk about some movies. First one I want to talk about is Home. It's an animated film from DreamWorks. A misfit from an alien race that has invaded Earth befriends a teenager looking for her mother.
Among Boov, I do not fit in.
Nobody's perfect. Your mistakes are what make you human. Okay, pee break.
Ooh, I too have to break pee.
Do not eat the blue mints! Thankfully, there is a large bowl of lemonade. Do not drink the lemonade!
What is happening to my body?
It's called dancing.
Boov, do not dancing.
I can tell.
How long before this kills me? Oh no! My hands are in the air like I just do not care.
One of the things I like the most about DreamWorks' current slate of movies is they've gotten away from Shrek. They've gotten away from just retelling fairy tales and doing the twisted, we had way too many twisted fairy tales. I mean, like 10 years ago, it was like Shrek and Ellen Enchanted, and then we had Romeo and Juliet. It was just so many of these. Now, they're not drawing completely from original scripts because these are based on books. This is based on a book, but it's not a book a lot of people have heard of. And it's kind of cool. It's a little bit different. It's unique. It's something. It's so often people complain about there not being enough different and unique movies. And DreamWorks has done a lot of these. I remember when they did Megamind. Megamind was way out there, and it was different. Monster vs. Aliens was weird and bizarre, but really kind of cool. And I will always give DreamWorks a nod because they're doing something different. They're not directly trying to compete with Pixar, because Pixar does its own thing, and they're warm and fuzzy and adorable and beautiful movies. But they're Pixar, and they've got a corner on that market. Now we've got DreamWorks doing their own things, and I think this is great. Now, when it comes to Home, there's some great things about this movie. It's beautifully animated. It's very cute. It's very clever. I took my son, my youngest, he's 6, and he loved it. And he loved it because it has marshmallow-shaped aliens and a lot of potty humor and some silly things happening. And the alien's cute. Now, I know there's people who are annoyed with Jim Parsons, who's Sheldon from The Big Bang Theory. He plays the voice of the alien. If you don't like him, you're going to be annoyed. It's kind of like when Larry the Cable Guy does the voice of Mater in the Cars movies. If you don't like Larry the Cable Guy, you're probably going to be annoyed with those Cars movies. So if you don't like Jim Parsons, you might want to sit this one out. What's interesting is Rihanna plays the teenage girl whose mother has been taken away, and she's trying to get back with her. Although Rihanna's nothing special in this movie, it's not like, it could have been anybody doing the voice, but it's kind of surprising because if you saw Battleship, Rihanna couldn't put two cohesive words together. I mean, she sounded like she was just randomly saying things. I mean, she was like stuttering and stammering through. I don't know whether that was her fault or Peter Berg's fault for directing her. I have a feeling that just Rihanna. I mean, you put her in a booth, you can kind of just, she could just say all these words and we'll edit them together. I've never heard Rihanna speak intelligently in my life, except in this movie. And I did think it was a little bit odd to suddenly have Chris Brown show up in the middle of the movie and beat her up. I guess that was necessary. No, that really doesn't happen. I'm kidding. I don't want people to really go see this or not go see this movie because they said, well, Kevin Carr said that Brianna gets beaten up in the movie. She doesn't. But what's interesting about this film is, as cute as it is, and it tells an adorable little story, it also swerves in these really heavy topics. Because the gist of it is these aliens are trying to find a new place to live, and they decide to live on Earth. And so they have a relocation program where they basically abduct all the humans. They put them in Australia in a very nice area. I mean, it's a very nice, it's basically a giant neighborhood for all the humans on Earth, which is actually scientifically possible. You can fit the entirety of the human population in, like, the state lines of, like, an area the size of Rhode Island, and everybody gets a house. There's really not that many people. But it does beg all these questions about manifest destiny and about internment camps and about relocation and about colonization. I mean, yeah, it's the cutest, warmest, fuzziest alien invasion ever, but I remember watching this movie and I'm like basically lifting people out of their house and taking them to Australia, and they accidentally leave Rihanna's character behind, and I'm like, this is actually really horrifying. Now, they present it in a warm and fuzzy way, but when you look at the reality behind this, this would be a horror movie if you shot it a different way, a terrifying science fiction film. They don't hit any of those issues. But there's, like, genocide that's like, brought into play, and there's revenge. I mean, there's a lot of really heavy stuff that if you think beyond the warm and fuzzy, cute and cuddly aspect of the movie, it can get pretty dark. But it's all subtext. I don't know if anyone's going to... My kid didn't notice any of that, but I remember driving home going, I wonder if he's going to ask. Is this what we did to the Native Americans? Or something like that. But overall, Home is cute enough. Now, if you heard in the trailer, there was a part of the dancing where he's like, my hand's in the air, I just don't care. The other thing they do with Rihanna, which is annoying, is they use it as a platform for her to basically release an album. And it puts a bunch of her songs in there. And some of them are just awkwardly not fitting the movie. I don't listen to Rihanna, so I don't know her repertoire. But like that scene that you heard in the trailer of him dancing, that's not the music they use. They put in a Rihanna song, which doesn't work as well. And that's one of the things I ran into as a problem in this film, because it's awkward. It just doesn't work. Anyways, I have to say that Home still kind of rocks. Cute enough for the kids.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next movie I want to talk about is Serena. Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence play a married couple trying to run a North Carolina timber company in the Depression.
Did you find a wife or a partner?
Both.
Well, a letter came from the bank.
I'm afraid your stocks are no longer sufficient collateral.
He can destroy us, George.
You're going to go to prison.
Our future, everything that we talked about, we will lose it.
We promised to tell each other everything.
I didn't want to frighten you.
I'm not that kind of woman.
Don't want to forget about everything but each other.
I'm doing this for us, George.
This movie's actually fascinating on its own. The movie itself's not that good. I'm not even going to spend much time reviewing it. It's a Hallmark movie. It's something you would have seen on TV. It looks good. It has some pretty good production value, and it's shot, I think it's shot like in Bosnia or something. It's shot in Yugoslavia, somewhere in Eastern Europe, to make it look like North Carolina, the Smoky Mountains. And it's beautiful scenery, and the imagery is pretty good. They actually got good actors, not just Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence, but you got like Toby Jones in there. It's got all the elements of what a movie would be, but I found no emotional connection to the characters. I thought it kind of dragged. I didn't particularly believe what was going on through a lot of it. I thought it was trying to break out and do something unique, but ended up doing something that we've kind of seen a million times before. It gets overly convoluted and dark at times. But beyond all that, what's interesting about this movie is Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. The last two times they're in a movie together, they each got an Oscar nomination. Now, both of those were directed by David Russell, but this was not what you'd expect from the follow-up. And you know what's funny is I've heard people say, why is this not getting a full theatrical release? It's going into limited theatrical releases, but it's mostly on demand. And I'll tell you exactly why. It's not that good of a movie. 30 years ago, this would have been moment by moment with Lily Tomlin and John Travolta. Where they take these stars who had big successes prior and then release a movie that bombs. Or like Shanghai Surprise with Sean Penn and Madonna, or The Marion Man with Kim Basinger and Alec Baldwin, where they have this couple. Now, those are all people who are real-life couples. They're not real-life couples. But they've taken these names, and Hollywood kind of has learned to say, you know what, just because these two are in a movie does not mean it's going to do well. Let's just set this out on VOD. And I think that was a smart move, because it's not that good of a movie. I'm going to have to say that Serena sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this leg of the show. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Get Hard and It Follows. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Moving through our movie review segments, this segment I'm going to be talking about two movies that are more for the adults. Well, I guess Serena wasn't for kids, but Home definitely was. But these two I'm going to be talking about definitely are not for kids. The first one is Get Hard. Will Ferrell plays a white-collar criminal going to a maximum security prison who hires Kevin Hart to teach him how to survive on the inside.
I sentence you to maximum security prison.
You have 30 days to get your affairs in order.
I didn't do it!
They sending you to San Quentin?
Yeah, damn!
Teach me how to survive in prison the way you did.
Wait, what?
I could pay you.
See you tomorrow, convict. Now, if you do exactly what I say, you will definitely survive in prison. Let me see what your mad dog face looks like.
I'm sorry, what's a mad dog?
Your mad dog! Like a pit bull with no leash. Oh, what are you doing, James?
I'm sad dogging you.
James.
I think that's a strategy that could work.
This movie is this weird amalgamation of just being raunchy and stupid and basal and, you know, lowbrow, but also making some interesting points. And it doesn't preach. But it does, I mean, if you really want to examine this movie, there are these little slight nods to institutionalized racism, which is, it exists, and it's something that happens. One of the things, I mean, of course, they're all straw men. I mean, Will Ferrell plays the straw man Wall Street guy. He was a complete racist, because the whole thing is he thinks Kevin Hart's character has gone to prison because he's black. And Kevin Hart's like this, just this guy trying to, you know, get along and have a job. He's never been to prison, although he does have a cousin who's been to prison, played by T.I., who is, of course, quality workmanship there. And it has these little points in there that are made, but it doesn't overly do them. So when the story gets going is when all the lowbrow humor starts. And that's, of course, he has to go to prison, so he doesn't want to go to prison. And he's being sent to maximum security because they want to make an example out of him. He's going to be there like for 4 years. And so he needs to learn how to survive on the inside because he just doesn't want to deal. Because prison's an ugly, ugly place. You do not want to go to maximum security prison. I toured a prison once for something, and it's a scary thing. And this wasn't even like lockdown maximum security, but I knew there were some creepy people there. Prison's not somewhere you really want to go, regardless of who you are and how you were raised. Let's just say it hammers home the very crass reasons why you don't want to go to prison. And a lot of that involves a sexual assault that happens. And there's a lot of jokes on that, which dovetails into a lot of jokes about homosexuality. And what's interesting about this is I know some people that have criticized this movie and said that it's homophobic. I don't know if I would call it homophobic. There's a lot of jokes about guys not wanting to engage in that behavior, but these are not gay men who are you're involved. It's not saying it's gross. And I guess that's part of it. It's not taking a stand against homosexual behavior. It's basically saying, I don't want to go to prison because I don't want to be forced into that. And no one should. In fact, this has more to say about sexual assault than most movies do, which is amazing that sort of the taboo of bringing to a discussion sexual assault comes in this movie more than anything else. Yes, there's a lot of moments where Will Ferrell, his character, makes it very abundantly clear that he is not interested in having any sort of sex with another man. It's not even him declaring that it's wrong. It's just he doesn't like that. I have a friend who's gay. And he was once asking me, he's like, why do guys freak out about seeing men naked? And why do they not, you know, why are they so offended by, they don't want to see a guy naked. They don't want to see any gay porn and all that kind of thing. And I said, well, here's the thing. It's kind of like your dad. I mean, I don't have anything against my dad, but I don't want to see him naked. It's not what I'm interested in. Now, if you were to say to me, like Alison Brie's in this movie, who I love Alison Brie. And you say, would you like to see Alison Brie naked? I'd be like, yes. Do you want to see Will Ferrell naked? Not really. You do. You see a lot of his butt in this movie. And it's played off as a joke. But then again, you even look at it, Will Ferrell does not have a very good butt. That is where Will Ferrell and I are very similar. We have this micro butt. You could like wash clothes on it. It's like, you know, they have washboard abs. We have washboard butts. You could scrub it down and use it to, you know, I mean, it's so, I mean, you could ski down our butts in the summer. And so it's not an attractive thing. Now, if you're into Will Ferrell, yeah, maybe it is. But the whole point is this movie, it's not homophobic, but it represents what it would be like for anybody in any situation to be forced into that. I know I'm making way too much of a social commentary with this film, but I find it interesting that there's been a reaction to this. When really all it is a guy going, I don't want to be sexually assaulted by anybody. But ultimately, it's a lowbrow movie. There's a lot of raunchy jokes. There are a lot of crass comments. There's graphic nudity, which we all know what that means in a movie. It says graphic nudity. You're going to see someone's junk. Real or not, I don't know. You know what I mean? It could have been a special effect. This is not a highbrow film. But you know what? Doggone it, I laughed. I like Will Ferrell. I like Kevin Hart. I think they actually have a really good chemistry. I mean, they're like, they're about as opposite as they can. He's really tall. He's really short. One's very, very dark. Will Ferrell's, you know, he's practically clear. You know, and they have very different styles of humor and very different styles of comedy. But they worked well together. I thought they were funny. As long as you can get in with the jokes and you think it's funny, you'll probably enjoy it. I laughed. I can't help it. I'm sorry. I apologize. I like this movie. Get Hard kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie. This is actually the one I'm most excited to talk about. It's called It Follows. A young woman is pursued by a relentless entity which will kill her unless she can pass the curse on to someone else.
This thing, it's going to follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you.
Wherever you are, it's somewhere walking straight for you. All you can do is pass it along to someone else.
It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. Whatever helps it get close to you.
This movie kind of came in under the radar. It showed at South by Southwest and had a huge response. And it's been knocking around for a while. I've gotten press releases about it as it was doing festivals. And it's opened in limited release. And they were just going to drop it onto VOD. But it got such good buzz. And it did so well at South by that they said, hey, let's drop it in over 1,000 theaters this weekend. And let me tell you, if you're at all into horror movies, go check this one out. It is extremely creepy. Now it's sort of chic to do sort of those electronic soundtracks, the throwbacks to the 80s. It has one of those soundtracks, which I love. It always is a piece of me because I grew up with that stuff. But that makes it feel kind of like an old John Carpenter movie from the 80s. And it's not overtly violent. It's not overtly sexual, although there's a lot of sex that's involved because it's the curse is passed along by having sex. But it's not exploitative. I mean, it's not just showing nudity and craziness. It's got some great imagery in there. It's got some great suspense. I've heard people say, oh, I didn't find it scary. And I always have to question, is that how we define a horror movie? I love horror movies. I've grown up with horror movies. I don't define horror movies as necessarily having to scare you. I'm very, very hard to scare. I have seen so many horror movies, and I've seen some extreme horror movies. But I don't think you need to be scared for a horror movie. It's just like, you don't have to weep at the end of a drama or a romance to find it entertaining. Comedy, you need to have, you got to laugh to enjoy a comedy. But I don't think you need to be scared. I don't think you need to lose sleep on a horror movie. And also, a lot of times, scariness, it's all generational. When my dad was a kid, the Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman was terrifying. I watch that now. It's ludicrous. I love it. I still love Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. These are fun movies, and they're great horror movies. They got great elements to them. To me, the scariest movie ever was Invasion of the Body Snatchers, in particular the 1978 version with Donald Sutherland. I've shown that to my kids. It doesn't scare them. I couldn't sleep for a week after seeing that movie. But they'll still concur that it's a great movie. One of the greatest horror movies ever made was The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing in 1982. I don't know if I'd call that scary. It has some chilling ideas to it, but it's effectively made. You know, does an action movie have to give you a heart attack to enjoy it? No. But, so does a horror movie have to, like, make you lose? That's a dumb criticism. I didn't find it scary. Well, that's okay. There's a lot of stuff I don't find scary, but I still enjoy. It's a great movie. And you may find it scary. Also, it gets in your head if you start thinking a lot about it. And then there's a lot of questions it raises that it never answers. And I remember talking to the guy who runs the theater after we saw the movie. And I'm like, what about this? What about this? Will this work? And he's like, I don't know. We agreed. We kind of like the idea that they don't tell you everything that's going on. It's a discovery kind of film. And it is really effective. It is so worth checking out. It's one of the most surprising releases of horror films I've seen in a while. Kind of like The Babadook last year. When The Babadook came out and I watched it, I go, this was an incredibly effective movie. Worked really, really well. Good for them. And same thing with It Follows. It Follows is a great movie. Totally rocks. Check it out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Fat Guy Sound Off, the box office, and the world famous DVD Roundup.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies for the final leg of our show. Let's start this off with a Fat Guy sound off. I did one of these last week. This past week was spring break for my kids. And one of the things we did was, we do these movie marathons. I showed them all the James Bond movies. Last year during spring break, I showed them all the X-Men movies, usually timed with the new movie that's coming out. This year, of course, we got Avengers Age of Ultron coming out in May. So I sat down with them and rewatched all the Marvel Cinematic Universe films. It's always interesting to watch everything in a small period of time. Watching all the James Bond movies gave me a unique perspective on James Bond as a series. And when I watched all the Star Wars movies, not as much, but still there. X-Men, same thing. Planet of the Apes, really noticed some things about that. It's kind of cool to see all the movies in one fell swoop because you see what's similar about them and you kind of see what makes them work as a series or not work as a series, like the Alien and Predator movies. I still have to say, my favorite of the pre-Avengers films is The Incredible Hulk. And I also then would say my second one is Iron Man 2, mainly because neither of those are origin stories. I'm so tired of origin stories. And even though they were necessary for Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man, these are never about the hero as much as they are about how they got to be the hero. And I've just seen so many of them. But I really think the series kicked off with the Avengers, and everything post-Avengers has been fantastic. I liked Iron Man 3. I liked Thor 2, I like Captain America 2, and I loved Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think there's a building that's happened with the Marvel movies, and Marvel has been very, very smart about it, and they've had a consistent vision. And what this does is it shows the big things that DC and Warner are doing wrong with their series. Now, they may end up becoming big hits. I'm going to nail four specific things. Here are four things that are the problem with what DC is doing. The first one, and I've talked about this before, so I'm going to gloss over it a little bit, is the plan for the Marvel movies was in place since, what, like 2006? They knew they wanted to make all these movies and eventually make the Avengers, but they didn't make the Avengers the second or third movie they made. They said, let's do Iron Man, we'll do the Incredible Hulk, then we'll do another Iron Man to kind of keep that going, and we'll do Thor and Captain America, and then we'll roll and do the Avengers. I mean, Avengers wasn't even set up until after Iron Man was definitely a hit. They took their time. DC is doing it totally backwards. They're trying to back end into it. They're using the Superman sequel, the Man of Steel sequel, to introduce everybody. And if anything we've learned from Iron Man 2 is that trying to backdoor everybody's origin story into one movie can kind of backfire, which it caused some problems with Iron Man 2. Fortunately, they got it out of the way and they did it. But I mean, you're introducing Aquaman and Green Lantern and Wonder Woman. You're introducing everybody and it's just going to seem so crowded. DC's putting the cart next to the horse, not before the horse, but they're putting it next to the horse, and it might be a disaster. The second big potential problem with the DC movies is Marvel, for some of the fact they changed some things, like the Mandarin, but overall, the Marvel movies follow the books pretty well. I don't read Marvel, but from what I understand, they try to make it as true as possible to the stories that are going on in the comics over the years. I mean, things change over decades, but trying to make it consistent. Whereas Warner Brothers and DC is kind of trying to reinvent everything. They're trying to reinvent Aquaman. They're trying to reinvent Batman and Superman. Already Superman was reinvented with nonsense that had nothing to do with the comics, where the atmosphere is giving him his powers instead of the yellow sun, and it kind of changed a lot of stuff with Krypton. I mean, it's not even close to what happened in the comic books, and it's just another inconsistent mess. And I have a feeling they're going to do that. Why? And that's partly a director's decision. Get to that in a second. But the third one is they're not using the colors like Marvel does. Marvel, their movies are very colorful and they're bright and they look artistic but they still look like comic books. All the Dark Knight movies were dark and gritty, and that's fine because Batman works, but then they did that with Superman, and Superman looked like it was practically black and white at times, and all the stuff I've seen from Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, it looks like the dress question. Is it black and blue, or is it gold and white? I mean, that's basically the color palette you've got there. Making it overly dark, it works for Batman. You can't do it for everybody because the entire series is going to be just drab. It's going to be hard to get through. It's like watching 17 hours of Blade Runner. Blade Runner is a great movie, but not every movie needs to look like Blade Runner. The final thing, and this is one of the big problems, the Marvel Cinematic Universe spread around directors. There is one showrunner to this whole thing, and that is Kevin Feige from Marvel Studios. He is the one who's in charge. Jon Favreau started things off and kind of set the tone with Iron Man. But if you look at The Incredible Hulk, it's very different because they were made at the same time. They basically came out a month apart. Kevin Feige kind of directs everything from top down, but there's just been one movie so far that has had the same director, and that was Iron Man 2. Everyone else has been done by different directors. So this is Disney also taking a hand of saying, well, this is the corporate vision, and you guys need to conform to that. Whereas what DC has done is they said, okay, Zack Snyder did Man of Steel, and Zack Snyder's going to do Dawn of Justice, and he's going to do everything. So it's not even DC's movies, it's Zack Snyder's movies. And that's why you get an egomaniacal director who wants to make his own changes and put his own mark on the series. And that's one of the biggest problems that I see coming from the DC movies versus the Marvel films. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quick about the box office. Last week, the box office, obviously, Insurgent won. Although I have to say, it was a bit surprising. It originally came in almost exactly at making the same money as Divergent did. But when the actuals came in, it actually was $2 million less. Divergent made like $54.7 million its opening weekend. Insurgent, on the same weekend this year, has made $52.2 million. And the reason that's significant is that's actually a bump down. Not just because it's $2 million. And inflation, you're just talking a year, so it's not a big deal. But this had a 3D and IMAX bump, which meant significantly fewer people actually saw the movie. And even though the budget bumped up to like $110 million. This means Insurgent is probably not going to come anywhere close to making the $150 million that Divergent made in its full theatrical run. So you're going to have this rate of attrition. And it makes me wonder what's going to happen with the next movie, which is supposed to be the first part of the third book broken up. And seeing how Hunger Games took a 25% hit on that, I mean, is the next Divergent movie going to be even lower than that? I mean, it's maybe it'll only make $30 million. This thing may burn out. I hope so, because I'd like to see this whole idea of splitting the final book into two movies just end soon enough, because it's dumb. It works sometimes, but not every time. The Gunman did not do well and only made $5 million. Not a big surprise. I was asked this on the radio and I said, look, you know what? When you advertise a movie is one thing and you don't deliver on that, anyone who sees it wanting to see what you're advertising is going to be disappointed. And anyone who wants to see what the movie is isn't going to see it because the advertising is bad. And then you're going to get bad word of mouth. That's why The Gunman bombed. And then Do Your Believe made $3.5 million. Did not do very well compared to a lot of these other faith-based movies. This may have been just a fad and it'll come back in a couple years. This week, I think Get Hard, I'm going to say Get Hard's going to win with $30 million. That's generous. The thing I think is going to have a problem with is the R rating. It doesn't hurt Kevin Hart, but it might hurt Will Ferrell. His R-rated stuff tends to not do as well as his PG-13 stuff. And I think Home could win, but Home isn't opening in that vacuum of no kids. I mean, there's really no kids film, but it had Insurgent and Cinderella, so there's still competition out there for it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. There are two big releases I want to hit this week. The first one is The Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies, which is available in 3D and looks great. By the way, if you have a 3D TV, these are the kind of movies you want to get for the 3D TV because it looks fantastic. It was shot for 3D, and it makes a difference. You see the difference even more at home for a movie that's been shot for 3D versus a converted film. Capturing the image on a smaller screen in your house, it looks better and you get more depth and it's crisper. Whereas in a theater, it's a little more forgiving because it's so huge and your eye doesn't capture everything. But on TV, it does. This is one of the movies that are worth picking up in 3D, and it completes the Hobbit trilogy. I like them. I really did enjoy them. This is a fantastic looking movie. It's got a lot of action. It's not a complete story, but it's just the ending of the other two movies. It's definitely worth checking out. It's a little light on special features, but that's probably because the beefier version of it is going to come out in the extended edition probably later this year or closer to Christmas. But if all you care about is the movie, you can get that. You can also get The Hobbit as a 3-movie set. The other big release I want to talk about is Mystery Science Theater 3000 Volume 32. The movies they've collected on this one is Radar Secret Service, San Francisco International, Hercules, and Space Travelers. What's neat about this is two of the movies are Joel, two of the movies are Mike. If you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater, you get a nice sampling. And while this doesn't have any of the most famous ones like Manos or Teenage Strangler, it offers, especially with the Joel episodes, kind of like what that Saturday morning movie watching was. You know, watched Hercules, and it feels like a Saturday morning host, and that's what I used to love about this show. Space Travelers is interesting because it's the movie Marooned, put into Mystery Science Theater, and it's an Academy Award-winning film that got the MST treatment. Definitely worth seeing. And then Radar Secret Service is one of these low-rent, smaller movies. And San Francisco International has sort of this charm to it because Kevin Murphy, one of the writers, and Frank Conniff, one of the writers, obviously love all of these old 70s and 80s TV shows and TV movies. And that's what it's made for. So these are fun. And they got a little extra features. Not a whole lot of extra features, but like Frank Conniff does introductions for each of them. They do a behind the scenes on each disc. It's worth getting, especially if you're a fan of Mystery Science Theater. The last couple ones I want to talk about, we've got Into the Woods, which is, of course, the musical, which is based on the Sondheim musical, which has been toned down a little bit for a Disney release. Worth seeing. It looks beautiful. And if you like the actors, it's got a great cast. And then also Unbroken, which is Angelina Jolie's World War II drama, the World War II hero who is in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. Stinger of the Week is Song 1, a boring, dull movie about Anne Hathaway falling in love with a musician. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the sure-to-win-the-Oscar Furious 7 and Effie Gray.